I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Dr. Perlmutter is a board-certified neurologist and a 5-time New York Times bestselling author. He serves on the board of directors and is a fellow of the American College of Nutrition. Dr. Perlmutter received his MD degree from the University of Miami School of Medicine, where he was awarded the Leonard G. Roundtree Research Award. He serves as a member of the editorial board for the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease and has published extensively in peer-reviewed scientific journals, including the Archives of Neurology, Neurosurgery, and the Journal of Applied Nutrition. In addition to speaking engagements, he serves as the associate professor at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. And Dr. Perlmutter's books have been published in 32 languages and include the #1 New York Times bestseller, Grain Brain, The Surprising Truth About Wheat, Carbs, and Sugar, with over 1 million copies in print. He's joining the BWBK podcast for the second time to discuss his newest book, Drop Acid, The Surprising New Science of Uric Acid, The Key to Losing Weight, Controlling Blood Sugar, and Achieving Extraordinary Health. This was one of the most fun conversations I've had in a really long time, and you can expect the 101 on uric acid in the next hour. Dr. Perlmutter, welcome back to the show.
It's really great to see you again. Thank you, Kelly.
Oh, I've been anticipating this book since our last show, actually, when you teased it that your new book, Drop Acid, was coming out in 2022, and it was going to be all about uric acid. We were just talking before the podcast. We needed something fresh to talk about it. We needed, you know, I've been beating the blood sugar horse for a decade, and you've been talking about a low glycemic ketogenic type lifestyle for brain health for years as well. So to have a new metabolic byproduct to talk about, and you did such a great job pulling together all of the studies and how uric acid is really impacting our health. So I'm just so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I've been, as you can imagine, really pumped up about it. And I think when you frame what's really going on in our bodies in terms of historically why this was a good thing, and now we see what we've done to the very mechanisms that were in place to keep us alive, it becomes very real, very understandable, and very empowering in terms of what we can and should do about it. I mean, this elevation of the uric acid makes us fatter. It makes us gain blood, makes our blood pressure go up, our blood sugars go up, all good things. Think about what I just said, that gaining weight, raising your blood pressure, becoming insulin resistant, all good things for our ancestors, because they didn't know where their next meal would come from. So if they could have a little extra body fat or raise their blood sugar or raise their blood pressure, those were powerful survival mechanisms. So in this regard, the mutations in the genes that then led to higher levels of uric acid that actually took place in our ancestors around 14 to 17 million years ago when the earth became cooler, those were powerful survival advantages that in the face of not having enough food were great. Nowadays, we're turning that survival pathway on and we're doing it 365 days a year, making more fat, raising our blood sugar, making us insulin resistant, raising our blood pressure. And, you know, we see what's happening. But it's uric acid that has been identified as screaming this signal in our body. It's just yelling out, danger ahead, make fat. Now that we get that, it explains so much because, you know, for example, the first real report about fructose endangering our metabolic health was published in 1970 in the journal The Lancet. And we got that and we saw other studies over the years, but we never understood how and why. And now we know because fructose is metabolized to become uric acid, which then makes all these things happen. Now we get it. Now that piece has been added to the jigsaw puzzle. Maybe that's a corner piece. I don't know. But it really is, if you're curious about all this stuff, it really is very helpful.
Well, your new book, Drop Acid, goes into all of this, but I want to give people the 101 here on the podcast who've never heard of uric acid. You know, it's funny, when I look back in my practice, I've been seeing clients for 10 years, and one of my first clients was a friend from USC who was my age at the time, 27, 28 years old, and he had gout. And that was the first time I had ever heard of uric acid. He also had a sour candy addiction, and he was a sales rep driving around in his car eating sour candy. And his doctor at the time had told him, cut out red meat, cut out wine, no mention of fructose at all. And so I went into the research and was like, this is a fructose issue, and you have to ditch all of this high fructose corn syrup candy that you're eating every day. And we resolved it. But I never would think that it was impacting like the normal, I don't want to say lay person, but the person not presenting with gout.
So that's right.
Can we go back to the beginning?
I mean, like, you know, we've all known about uric acid. We've known about it only in the context of gout. You know, your uric acid level goes up because you're eating a lot of rich meat and you develop crystals in your big toe and it hurts like heck. And that's what gout is. So if you keep people off the meat and the wine and cheese, by golly, they'll be fine. Well, you're right, though, that two things. First, the biggest player in raising uric acid isn't red meat. It's fructose. In fact, the top five things that will raise uric acid are number one, fructose, number two, fructose, number three, fructose, number four would be the purines in the red meat, number five, alcohol. So it's really the fructose story that, for whatever reason, isn't something that mainstream medicine ever wants to talk about in any context, anything to do with sugar. It was always literally taken off the table in terms of our discussion. You know, even to this day, it was always about the fat, right? Don't eat fat because terrible things, your kids will be born naked, all kinds of horrible things are going to happen if you eat fat. It's always been the sugar. And we see how industry insinuated itself into the medical discussion, into the medical literature to keep sugar literally out of the discussion. So even to this day, if you go online and want to read about a diet to help lower the uric acid, you're right. It's all about the meat and the liver and high purine foods, but they very rarely will mention fructose. That's, as mentioned, the biggest player of all. Fructose is a signal to your body that winter's coming. That's when the fruit would ripen in the fall. Eat the berries, you consume fructose, you make more fat, because if you make more fat, you might survive. So a powerful survival mechanism, fructose, uric acid, the alarm goes out, make fat, and you would survive. That worked for us for 99.9% of our time on the planet. We would have fructose during a very short window in preparation for winter. It all fit together perfectly. Now, you know, that signal is activated 365 days a year that we're telling our bodies, get ready for winter, make a lot of fat. Look around. In America today, 1/3 of adults is obese. That's breathtaking. But in the distant future, 2030, that's way in the future. Who knows when that'll ever come, right? 8 years from now?
We're going to blink and it's going to be here.
1/2 of adults will be obese. 1 in 2 adults, not just overweight, but obese, you know, a metabolic disaster. 10% of our children between 12 and 18 has hypertension today. So in and of themselves, these are issues, but it's really more important, I think, to look at what are the manifestations, the downstream issues that stem from these metabolic problems, the coronary artery disease, the type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, cancer. That's what you get when you are metabolically dysfunctional, like 88% of American adults. Only 1 in 8 American adults right now, Kelly, as you and I have this conversation, is metabolically intact. And it is a consequence of choices that we make, of our lifestyle choices, playing against this genetics that wants to keep us alive, but now, you know, this is mismatched then between our evolution, our genetics, and our environment, meaning, you know, what we're exposed to, the foods we eat, the sleep we get or don't get, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's interesting because we've had this conversation for years about how the metabolism of sugar raises blood sugar, and that elevation in blood sugar can glycate in our body. And then we have elevated insulin and these things lead to it. But when you think about that other piece of the sugar molecule itself, the fructose, can you explain, is uric acid just a metabolic byproduct? What is it there to do? And how do we get rid of it?
Well, it's there to keep you alive and to keep you alive during times of food or water scarcity. And it's a wonderful and powerful mechanism that we don't need now. Because when we overactivate the mechanism, which we're all doing, we see what the manifestations are. And again, it's mostly the fructose. We could talk about the nuances of alcohol and the nuances of these chemicals called purines. But I mean, you've had Gary Taubes, you've had Robert Lustig on your program, and they've talked about, you know, the threat posed by elevation of our blood sugar and the threat posed by consuming sugar. And now it's been unraveled. Now we see it's been laid bare what fructose is doing, that it's causing us to eat more by inhibiting the function of leptin, by its metabolism into this seemingly inert byproduct, uric acid. Nothing inert about it. Uric acid directly damages mitochondria. It leads to insulin resistance by inhibiting nitric oxide. It stimulates its own production. You know, most of the time in your body, if you make something at the end of a long pathway, it feeds back and shuts itself off so it doesn't get too high. Not uric acid. It stimulates your consumption of fructose, the breakdown of fructose, and how fructose can be actually manufactured in your body even though you don't eat it. Think about that as a survival mechanism. So Nate, let's talk about that for just a moment, because we'll go back and talk about where, you know, how your body makes uric acid and how to fix that and all the things. But if fructose is such a devastating entity in your physiology, you want to do what you can to avoid it, though you can eat fruit. We'll talk about that in a moment. But under periods of stress, when your body thinks that you will not have enough food to eat or that you're going to dehydrate, you activate the formation of fructose in your body, the conversion of your glucose floating around in your bloodstream, your blood sugar, into fructose, and then, you guessed it, uric acid to make fat, to survive. So why would this be something you would activate, for example, if your body thought it was going to become dehydrated? I mean, what does that have to do with all this? when you become dehydrated, your sodium level, your serum sodium level will rise. Your body senses that. And one of the things it does is it turns on the production of fructose. Well, why would it do that? Because fructose will ultimately make you fatter. Well, how would that help you if you're dehydrated? The example I like to use is this incredible animal that can walk across the desert and go 3 weeks with no water. And the identifying characteristic of this animal is it has a hump on its back. And that hump is not filled with water. It's filled with fat. Why? Because fat, when you metabolize it, becomes carbon dioxide and water, metabolic water. So having fat in your body is a hedge against dehydration. That's why when your sodium goes up, when you're dehydrated, you activate the formation of fructose to make your body make uric acid to make you fat so you can make metabolic water and just enough that you might survive, just a little advantage. So we could trigger that mechanism right now. All I'd ask you to do, sit down and eat some pretzels, salted pretzels, and immediately your sodium level goes up, you turn on fructose production, you're going to gain weight. So we've known for decades that people who eat a lot of salt have a much higher risk of becoming obese, have a dramatic increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and we've known for sure that they certainly are at risk for hypertension. That's why the low sodium diet's been popularized for decades, right? But we never knew how it happened. And now, you know, I just love filling in these pieces of the puzzle. I really, really do, because there's such aha moments when you get it. You go, oh my God, that was a survival mechanism that now we're seeing the downsides, you know, the evil twin in terms of what it looks like when we overactivate these systems, what it does to us.
Ooh, so now I kind of have to unpack that with you because I want to work this mechanism backwards. You said we sit down and have salty pretzels. This is a carbohydrate, processed carbohydrate. It's going to spike your blood sugar, give you the glucose to convert to fructose to then convert to uric acid. And we're elevating salt. What would happen, like say, for example, someone lives a low-carb to ketogenic diet, they keep their blood sugar balanced or low, they're metabolically flexible. What and how would they incorporate salt and electrolytes into their diet? And very is simple. That a problem?
And I just did it.
You right? Just took a sip of your electrolytes?
No, I just drank water.
Oh,
so have your sodium if you must. You know, you don't want to go overboard. Drink water. If you dilute down the sodium after you have a glass of water, you're golden. Your sodium doesn't come up. You don't activate these mechanisms. But, you know, you bring to our attention the fact that I said, oh, the pretzels, this refined carbohydrate. You can do the same thing by eating an avocado with olive oil, which we all would recommend. But if you use a lot of salt, and I used to do that, a lot of Himalayan sea salt that was, you know, harvested by monks that prayed 3 hours a day, whatever, you know, it's salt. And, you know, the point is, though, that if you have that salt load, but dilute it down by drinking water, now you haven't raised your serum sodium. That's one less way to activate this pathway. Another way to activate the pathway is having high blood sugar. And, you know, that gets us back to all the people that have been the guests on your program, the work I did early on with Grain Brain, the notion of eating sugar, eating refined carbs, how that spikes your blood sugar, why we should be wearing a continuous glucose monitor to see how our own blood sugars behave in response to eating certain foods. So that will drive the fructose formation, will activate the uric acid level. The main thing you need to know is, hey, what is my uric acid level? That's where the rubber meets the road here. And that might be just a phone call away. I mean, likely if you get annual blood work, most likely they include the uric acid. And, you know, of course, that's in the context of gout. So it might be that you can get your uric acid by simply calling up your doctor and she or he will tell you, well, you were in 6 months ago, your uric acid was, generally they'll say it was in the normal range. They won't give you the number because why would you want to know a number? After all, you're just a patient. But that said, important to understand that when you are told the uric acid being normal or not normal, that that number, which is 7 milligrams per deciliter or below, that's the gout number. That's not what we want. We want not just normal, but optimal. And optimal in the world of cardiometabolic health is 5.5 milligrams per deciliter or lower. So that's what you need to know. So you may need to go back to the doctor and get a blood test, or you go online and you buy a monitor and you do a finger stick and you know your uric acid level. Here's mine. And here's my most recent measurement. It's 4.7. And this is a finger stick. You put a drop of blood on a little card, goes in the machine, and bingo. Now I know my uric acid level. And, you know, this understanding of uric acid is right up there with knowing your weight, your blood pressure, your fasting blood sugar, maybe if you're being creative, your fasting blood insulin. If you really want to be creative, you'll know, you know, your continuous glucose monitor, know your blood sugar at any given moment. You'll know the dynamics of your sleep, the quality and quantity of your sleep. Lots of things to know, but this is already on the list.
Definitely. Once I got my hands on your book, I got the UA scan, the uric acid at home test. And I love that because looking back, you know, years ago when I started with clients, CGMs weren't available. We were grabbing the glucometers from CVS. I was teaching them to test their fasting blood sugar and check in with themselves a couple hours after meals, even if they weren't diabetic, just to like have an understanding of how the meals they were eating were affecting them. And you mentioned sleep. It's like, I'm wearing my Oura Ring right now. I have a level CGM on my body, but the diagnostic tools, like they can really help you. And you're just rounding out that personalized view that we can take on our health at home to constantly be motivated. And I think this type of motivation is goes way beyond gene size and scale and vanity. It goes to your ability to function later in life, to be an active grandparent.
You have to do this. There's no choice because, you know, our healthcare system is a misnomer. It's not dealing with health. It's an illness-based approach. It is reactive, not proactive. Your doctor will step into the game when it's time to fix something, when it's time to give you something to lower your blood sugar or your blood pressure or what have you. And for some of the things that are so pervasive, there is nothing that she or he can give you, like Alzheimer's, for example. So we need to know this information, and we're grown up enough that we want the information because we can make changes. It's all about the knowledge that is so empowering then to make the changes that you and I have been talking about. You know, what an event it was last year with this Aduhelm drug for Alzheimer's that was, I want to be nice. I think bogus might be a little aggressive, but it was bogus. It wasn't helping people. And there was a significant increase in microbleeds and bleeding into the brain and the people taking the drug. So I pray that we will have a drug to treat Alzheimer's. If there were, I would have used it in patients, and I would have used it with my own father who died of that disease. Would have been great, but we don't have that. And yet, that's what the focus is to create that blockbuster billion-dollar revenue drug that's going to treat the disease that we know we can avoid. Alzheimer's is a metabolic situation. There's one study that came out of Japan. They followed 1,600 people, adults, for 12 years. At the beginning of the trial, they measured their uric acid level and packed it away somewhere. They followed these people for 12 years. Then they did an assessment as to their cognitive ability. How well is your brain working? They found that when they looked at the data, those people who had an elevated uric acid level above 7, their risk of dementia was increased by 80%. Risk of being a full-blown Alzheimer's patient was increased 50%, and risk of having what's called mixed dementia or vascular dementia was increased 166% in the group with the elevated uric acid. That's something to think about. You know, for me as a neurologist, that's why I have that, you know, data in the book as well. But, you know, there are other things to think about. One study that came out in 2009, looked at 90,000 people, 42,000 men, 48,000 women, and followed them for 8 years and did the same thing. Looked at them and stratified them based on their uric acid levels. Those who had, at the beginning of the trial, a uric acid level of 7 or above had a 16% risk of being dead for any reason whatsoever. We call that all-cause mortality. They had a 39% increased risk of what we call cardiovascular mortality, like a heart attack, and a 35% increased risk of dying from a stroke. And incredibly, for every point elevation above 7, the risk of all-cause mortality increased another 8 to 13%. So this is very, very real. And again, mainstream medicine is still pretty much focused on uric acid in relation to this painful toe situation called gout. And what I would say to all of your viewers right now is to Google two words, uric and metabolic, not metabolism, metabolic, uric and metabolic. And you'll see all the studies that we've been looking at that have been done over the past 20 years that really let us understand that there's one study that came out in 2016, the title of which is Uric Acid in Metabolic Syndrome, From Innocent Bystander to Central Player, meaning that it's not just that it happens to be elevated in obesity and hypertension and diabetes, it's playing a causal role. And why that's so valuable for everybody is, hey, we can reduce uric acid. We can limit our alcohol, our purine consumption. Certainly fructose we can focus on. We can take certain supplements that reduce uric acid formation, like things like quercetin, vitamin C, nothing really hugely exotic here. So it's well within our power to first learn what our uric acid levels are. We can do it at home and then get control over this important metabolic player.
Well, let's talk about and get into the nuances, if you don't mind, of the purines and the alcohol so people have an understanding. I think once we have an understanding of the science, like knowing that elevated glucose can be converted to fructose and converted to uric acid, and over-consuming fructose can, the metabolic byproduct is uric acid, we can lower our consumption of fructose, we can watch our blood sugar levels, you know, we can look at our sodium and processed food intake to make sure that we're not full of sodium and or dehydrated and producing this internally. But
no, you triggered me. I'm with you. Go ahead.
Take a sip of water. So let's just, if you can, wrap up in a pretty bow how purines and alcohol are producing uric acid.
Sure. So purines are the breakdown products of DNA and RNA, which are found in the nucleus of cells. The more cells a particular food has, the more purines it might have. So cells, foods that have a lot of cells are things like organ meats, liver, kidney, certain seafoods like scallops and mussels, anchovies, sardines are very dense types of foods. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't upsides to these foods. There are. I mean, we know liver is a great source of B12 and iron, and some people can choose to eat liver. I'm not being argumentative. I'm simply saying that they do have a lot of purines and they may be affecting your uric acid level. But you don't know till you know your level. So you got to know that. You may get away with eating a serving of liver from time to time. I won't do that for one important reason. I never liked liver. I remember I ran away from home at age 5 because my mother made liver and onions and I knew what the, anyway, I never liked liver. I don't think I've ever eaten kidneys, but that said, you know, I know that there are upsides and people choose to eat them, but it's, you know, limit your amounts if your uric acid level is elevated. As it relates to alcohol, which is also metabolized directly into uric acid, it matters what kind of alcohol we choose to consume. Hard liquor will raise uric acid. Wine in men has no real effect at modest amounts. Wine in women is actually associated with a lower uric acid level, not great shakes, but it's there. But the big player is beer. Why? Yes, it's an alcoholic drink. That's going to raise your uric acid level to some degree. But beer is very rich in purines because it's made from yeast, brewer's yeast, that is very cellular, if I may. So this is a powerful instigator to raising uric acid and making body fat around the belly. So we now understand where the beer belly comes from. It's because you're pounding this pathway from two inputs, both alcohol as well as the purines. So it can be a beer that doesn't have a lot of calories, tastes great, less filling, whatever, but it's got alcohol and it's got purines. So amazingly, in Japan now, and they're really way ahead of us in terms of understanding purines and uric acid and metabolism, they now make purine-free beer, several companies. And I don't know if they've started exporting it here to the United States. I haven't seen it yet. But they get this, and they know that people are paying attention much more so to their uric acid levels. So the big player, though, is fructose, and it's how it's delivered that matters more than anything else. When you bombard your body with a soda or a glass of orange juice or apple juice, you know, people say, I had a nice big glass of natural OJ. There's nothing natural about a glass. Our ancestors didn't find cartons of orange juice hanging from the trees when they were hunting and gathering. Eating an orange or an apple is a different story completely. Why? When you eat an apple, A, the fructose you're going to get ultimately is around 5 grams. So it's not a huge amount of fructose. B, it's you don't gobble it down like you drink a glass of juice. C, or three, if you number. I remember somebody asked me, I'm going to digress, I'm going to have to do it. I was talking to my counselor about what part of medicine I should go into and if I get into this residency program. And I remember he said, do you have a plan B? I said, no. He said, why not? I said, because I number my plans. Fiber in fruit does a couple of things. It slows the absorption of the fructose, and it also nurtures the gut bacteria, which play a role in helping us with inflammation, et cetera, and metabolic health. The other thing, fruit contains bioflavonoids like quercetin that can actually target the enzyme that is involved in making uric acid. It's called xanthine oxidase. That's where the gout drug works. And beyond that, it contains vitamin C that is very helpful with respect to helping us excrete uric acid. So you are absolute door open to eating some fruit. You don't want to, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. 5 apples a day, the doctor you will pay. So you don't want to go overboard. I mean, that's what a bear will do prior to hibernation. It needs to make as much fat as possible. So it's gorging on as much berries, as much fruit as it can find. Certain fruits are even really on the list, like tart cherries. Tart cherries have the bioflavonoids to lower uric acid, have the vitamin C, have very, very little fructose. And it's, in fact, the O of drop acid. It's the cherry falling down, meaning lowering your uric acid. So it's a good food. It's one of our hero foods that we put in our discussion of food, or the love diet, lower uric value diet.
I love it. Pun intended.
You do love it,
L-U-V. I love it. I love it. So one little thing for me is that Sebastian's in preschool, my 3-year-old. And I mean, the snack menu at school, we provide lunches, but the school provides snacks, and it's constantly like a juice and a cracker, a milk and a fruit. And Sebastian, the one thing that I put, you know, he has a dairy allergy, so he doesn't eat dairy. But the one thing I put in his, as like a parental request, is that he not drink liquid sugar. So I send him to school with water, and I send him to school with lemons and water, and occasionally a little bit of Element in his water just to flavor it. But what's interesting is he did ask me after school last week if he could have some orange juice, and we had oranges here, and we squeezed together an entire orange, and we maybe got a shot glass worth of orange juice. And he was just excited to drink it, and he was like happy about it. But it really does, when you are comparing the amount of fructose present in a glass of orange juice versus, or a glass of apple juice versus the fruit itself, like we really need to segregate that and separate that liquid fructose is so much more inflammatory. And there is the quantity wise per ounce.
36 grams of sugar. That's breathtaking. I mean, you know, it literally does take your breath away. And that is just activating this mechanism to tell your body winter's coming. That's what you're doing when you do that. You're getting ready to hibernate. And not many people seem to hibernate. Well, I don't know. I might take that back. I don't know.
No, but it's the worst. No one's even sleeping, let alone hibernating.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, the bear getting ready to hibernate, This whole mechanism is just lit up, that they're in fat storage, fat production mode, becoming, you know, pre-diabetic, insulin resistant, that's for sure, and metabolism being shut down. And how does the metabolism get shut down? How do we reduce our energy consumption? We do so by the effects of uric acid on damaging mitochondrial function. Now, who wants that? You know, who wants to throw a cog in the wheels of the Krebs cycle? Not me. It was hard enough to learn it, much less now destroy it with uric acid. But that is the insinuation of uric acid into mitochondrial function is how it reduces our energy requirement and allows us to keep our energy reserves as a survival mechanism. You know, when you understand that mitochondrial dysfunction is at the core of Alzheimer's, you don't want to mess with your mitochondrial function. You want to do everything you can to keep them healthy and happy and, you know, keep the systems in your body activated that will identify defective mitochondria and get rid of them, mitophagy. So you're right. It's all about, you know, the context of this uric acid as a survival mechanism gone awry, and that, you know, we're facing this evolutionary environmental mismatch where the signals we're giving to our physiology that are made by our evolution are the wrong ones. And I wrote about this 50 years ago in the Miami Herald when I was 16, and I concluded my article, it's in the book, with the statement, you know, what about those of us living today who are stuck with the outdated machinery? Well, there's nothing outdated about it, our bodies, our physiology. It's wonderful. It's so highly refined, and it allowed you and me to have our conversation today, but it's being challenged by an environment that it is ill-suited to. That is this environment of bombarding it with sugar, raising, you know, activating this pathway that's been present for 15 million years to raise uric acid and make fat and make, you know, raise our blood sugar, raise our blood pressure to keep us alive. Now it's, you know, it's just leading to these metabolic issues, which are the primary areas of our concern. You know, the number one cause of death on our planet, these chronic degenerative conditions. Now we have this tool. And are we early in the game? Yeah, we are. Your viewers are going to, you know, how do you spell uric? What is this, you know, it's all about? And, you know, I've been through this a number of times. I remember people raising their eyebrows when I said, hey, matter of fact, the gut bacteria are playing a role in your health. No way. I mean, come on. And, you know, that was many years ago, or that gluten was an issue, you know, eating a lot of refined carbohydrates, maybe we should avoid that. But, you know, there's been a lot of work done around the world in places like Japan and France and America, Dr. Richard Johnson, University of Colorado, a lot of great work being done that have really, you know, dropped this in our laps, and we've got to take full advantage of it.
Right. And we have something we can do to lower these levels. Your new book, Drop Acid, goes through those, and you have a love diet. So I'd love to go through some of the hero foods that you recommend for people to include in their diet and to lower uric acid levels and the supplements that you recommend.
Well, let me start with the supplements because it's fresh in people's minds. The enzyme that produces uric acid, one of the important enzymes that is the target of the gout drugs like allopurinol, is called xanthine oxidase. And it turns out that quercetin and luteolin, which are bioflavonoids available at the health food store, similarly target that enzyme, turn it down, and can have a really dramatic effect on lowering uric acid. One study out of England took young men who have mild elevation of uric acid and put them on 500 milligrams of quercetin each day. And in 2 weeks, their uric acid level fell by 8%. That's dramatic.
Significant. So, yeah.
Oh, you bet it is.
They're looking for that in a drug trial.
Oh, absolutely. And in many ways, these approaches are comparable to the drug that is used and do not have, you know, the potential side effects. So a dosage of quercetin would be 500 milligrams a day. Luteolin, which is also very effective, dosage would be 100 milligrams a day. And finally, vitamin C, I mentioned earlier, helps with the excretion. That would be an additional 500 milligrams a day. Now, I only listed 5 supplements in the entire book. There are many things that are good for you, but in the context of this metabolic derangement that we can acquire from having a high uric acid level, those first 3 that we just talked about help with the uric acid. But in terms of being helpful with regard to the metabolic issues, I really like DHA, which you can get from either a vegetarian source, marine algae, or from fish oil. And the dosage would be about 1,000 milligrams a day. And the next one is chlorella. And the reason I like chlorella in this context, 1,200 milligrams a day, chlorella vulgaris, is because chlorella dramatically helps with the development of what is called fatty liver disease. In this case, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is something that is induced when fructose is metabolized. The metabolism of fructose leads to the damage in the liver that increases its fat content. That is a very, very bad thing. And interestingly, two things very interesting. If you block the metabolism of fructose, you don't get non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But here's what's really interesting. If you block the metabolism of fructose, you don't get alcoholic fatty liver disease, at least in experimental animals, which means that it isn't the alcohol per se, but it's how alcohol stimulates the production of fructose, which then goes on to damage the liver. If you can keep the fructokinase enzyme, which is involved in the breakdown of fructose, if you can keep that in check, and you can have laboratory animals that don't have that, they don't get fatty liver disease when they are given lots and lots of alcohol. So something to think about in terms of humans, that it's actually the formation of fructose in alcoholics that then damages their liver. Something to think about. So we covered the supplements diet. We will cover, you know, certainly in the book, there are 40 recipes in there, but it's significantly plant-based. And that's coming from Dr. Perlmutter of Grain Brain. I'm saying that, yes, eating more plants is a good thing. The beauty of the Love Diet is that you can look at your current dietary predilection, whether it's paleo or vegan or keto, whatever it may be, through the lens of the Love Diet. In other words, through the lens of how might that the diet that I think I really want to eat be modified in such a way as to target uric acid, but I'm still on a vegan program, a keto program, whatever it may be, or flexitarian, if you will. And it really looks at those foods that can raise uric acid, like the purines, the alcohol, and certainly the fructose, and welcomes back the high fiber foods, the foods that deliver lots of bioflavonoids, things like red onion, for example, really high, one of the highest foods known in terms of quercetin and the cruciferous vegetables. But, you know, still allowing you to be flexible, to get into ketosis if you'd like to from time to time. I know you had Sarah Gottfried on the program talking about how valuable that is to be as flexible, especially for women, as it relates to hormone functionality, for example. But we've got to realize that at the heart of these issues is metabolic disturbance and the downstream issues of inflammation that stem therefrom, and how, you know, monumental inflammation is in terms of leading to our shortened life spans, our shortened health spans. And, you know, ultimately, I think we are going to see that there is an epigenetic, in other words, that elevation of uric acid changes gene expression in such a way that it leads to worsening of our health.
Does uric acid play a direct role in creating inflammation in the body?
Directly, absolutely. So the main things that it does directly are is it amplifies a free radical mediated stress or oxidative stress, and also dramatically increases inflammation. So, you know, you have to ask yourself, why was that a good thing, right? I'm telling you that all of this is adaptive for our ancestors. And inflammation is a really good thing at times when we are injured, when we are infected, when we, and it's been demonstrated, for example, that people who have high levels of uric acid have a kind of a significant resistance to becoming infected with malaria. So that there are upsides, at least in terms of our ancestors.
Right. I'm curious in regards to coffee.
I'm looking for my coffee here, because the answer is yes, gratefully.
Okay.
for those of us who look forward to their coffee.
Yeah.
Uric acid is lowered in coffee drinkers, even drinkers of decaf coffee, and to a lesser extent in green tea drinkers. So those beverages contain a lot of good polyphenols, these bioflavonoids as well, that may be the reason that coffee consumption is associated with lowering of uric acid. So yes, but it doesn't mean coffee plus the two packets of whatever it is you think you want to put in there.
Right. So looking at day in the life of you, you've moved more towards a plant-based diet and understanding uric acid, but I'm curious how often you're having protein with purines and what the flow of your day might look like.
So all protein is going, animal-based protein is going to have purines. Matter of fact, there's purines in many vegetables, in all vegetables, there are purines. There are higher levels, for example, in cruciferous vegetables and things that are really dense. Very high levels of purines in mushrooms, for example, and as I mentioned, yeast. But it looks like they're not necessarily in the amounts that you consume them. At least the cruciferous vegetables they're not going to be threatening to your uric acid level. So I eat a lot of vegetables. I do eat fish and some red meat on occasion, but this is not the center of my diet and really never has been, even in the grain brain days. And people would say, oh, it's all about eating a lot of meat. No, this isn't the next iteration of the Atkins diet. It never was. So, you know, the problem is we tell people to restrict carbs. They may say all carbs, including complex carbs. That's what dietary fiber is. You don't want to throw that one out. So I would say that for people, you know, paying attention to your podcast, it all starts with knowing where you are in the uric acid world and then determining how much you can tolerate in terms of meat in general, and certainly the purine-rich meats that we've already described. And portion control is certainly going to be something important as well. Salmon, I've been a huge fan of for a very, very long time, and I'm still not going to quit eating salmon. I live on a boat for 4 months out of the year, and we catch salmon. That's, you know, it's what we eat at times to survive. So, but it's about portions. It's about, you know, 6 ounces being reasonable, not having that kind of protein at every meal. And for me, it's about not having, I have 2 meals a day. You know, my first meal, which is when I break my fast, which I end up calling break fast, and then another meal in the early evening, and it's plenty of food for me. I recommend that? Yes. Do we talk about time-restricted eating in the book? You bet we do. What a nice and powerful way to also cater to your metabolism. You know, the work of Dr. Sachin Panda, really remarkable, powerful information about how if we not focus necessarily on what we eat, which is certainly important, but how much time during the day do we spend eating, and compress that to 8 hours or maybe 10 hours during which time we eat and not eat for the rest of the time. It feels great. It gives you a sense of gratitude. For me, it helps me sleep, helps me with my running. And I just think it's, that's why I put it in the book, along with mentioning things like continuous glucose monitoring, all the other things that are really right in the public awareness right now, but talking about how they are, you know, they add to this whole notion of keeping your uric acid under control.
Well, I just love that we have another blood marker to start paying attention to, because it's motivation for people, especially when I see clients using tech or using like a glucometer, a ketometer, and now, you know, a uric acid meter to understand their health as a whole. Like, what an empowering way to look at changing not only like your health span, but your waist circumference at the same time without that being the main goal and not knowing what's getting you where you need to go. It's just, it's beautiful because it's inspiring people to eat more colorful vegetables that are rich in phytochemicals. It's inspiring people to, you know, take a break on alcohol or on the fructose and maybe the overconsumption of proteins. It is interesting to me though, that all of what I would think of as the most nutrient dense foods have the most DNA and RNA, the sardines, the organ meats, the cruciferous vegetables, the mushrooms. How do you sort of sort that out in your brain, and when it comes to consuming these
foods. You know, sort out in your brain and everywhere else in your body.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to knowing where are you, right? Where are you on this scale? And how aggressive do you need to be? Can you get away with that? I mean, I was contacted last week by an influencer who I had gotten his uric acid monitor, and he was running between 9 and 11. That's really high, no matter what scale you want to look at. And I said, any idea? He said, well, I eat, you know, lots of liver every day because it's so good for me. Well, you know, there is something called too much of a good thing. And I'm not going to say that you shouldn't have liver, but now that you know where you are on this scale, then you might want to reconsider. Do you really need all that iron and all that B12, or do you have enough? Could they come from other sources? And yeah, I mean, I think there are plenty of arguments to be made that liver is a pretty good food if you choose to eat liver, animal products. But now that we have, this was very enlightening, and he's all in. He is all in. He doesn't eat any, you know, free fructose that he can imagine.
Right.
But, you know, the main goals that people want, aside from being healthy, are to be rich, to have great sex, and to be lose some weight, right? To be thinner.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that lowering uric acid is going to make you rich, but you might save money on, you know, healthcare expenditure, but at least. But, you know, the role on fat production, I think, is very clear. And I was kind of just making a joke about the sex part, but the reality is, interestingly, for men, that if your uric acid level is elevated, that you have a 38% increased risk of erectile dysfunction. Why might that be? Uric acid directly inhibits nitric oxide. And we need nitric oxide for a couple of things. We need it to allow blood vessels to dilate, and we need it for insulin to do its job. When nitric oxide is inhibited, insulin cannot make its way through the blood vessel and get into the cell to help lower our blood sugar. So the inhibition of nitric oxide by uric acid explains the high risk of cardiovascular disease, of stroke, of diabetes because of the insulin issue and the blood vessel issue. And in terms of erectile dysfunction, if arteries cannot dilate or blood vessels cannot dilate, that could certainly contribute to erectile dysfunction, especially when you think about how Viagra works. Viagra works by enhancing nitric oxide's ability to allow dilatation of blood vessels, hence erectile functionality. And so we want to keep nitric oxide in the game. Uric acid works against us. An interesting study came out about a month ago that showed that men who routinely used Viagra, therefore increased their nitric oxide, had a 70% reduced risk of Alzheimer's. Man. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying everybody should be taking Viagra, men and women. But what I am saying is, hey, this nitric oxide is pretty darn important for us to be healthy. Maybe we should think twice about compromising it with elevation of our uric acid. So it's so interesting when these studies come out and you start to understand through this new lens how this might be working.
I feel like you're connecting so many dots for me, because in seeing the metabolic research that erectile dysfunction can be a symptom of metabolic dysfunction and would be a sign for, say, a young man in their late 30s or early 40s, erectile dysfunction out of nowhere. We don't think it's, you know,
yeah,
stress induced or something.
Nowhere, you know?
And then all of a sudden the blood tests are elevated blood sugar, right?
That's right. And again, it doesn't generally exist in isolation. If you have vascular disease that's accounting for your erectile dysfunction, you know the coronary arteries are involved as well. These things don't happen in isolation. So that's a powerful marker. And I think that, you know, a man going to the doctor's office saying, you know, complaining of erectile dysfunction, that Viagra is not the answer. You know, this person's in trouble from a metabolic perspective, from stem to stern. You know, this is issues involving the brain, the heart, the kidneys. It's far beyond the erectile dysfunction in and of itself. But, you know, what happens is they get a pill, and the next thing you know, their erectile dysfunction may be a little bit better, but you've really not approached the underlying issue.
Right. Oh, So let's say someone gets their uric acid meter and they start testing their uric acid and they come up like the influencer you mentioned between 9 and 11. And I go, oh my goodness, especially as a male, what could potentially be, you know, all of the potential chronic lifestyle diseases that would be kind of down the pipe for them, plus erectile dysfunction. They want to lower it. They start to implement your diet. They include the supplements you're recommending. How, you know, I have an understanding of how long it takes for most clients to bring blood sugar down. 2 weeks. I mean, that's amazing. I mean,
will it be perfect in 2 weeks? I can't say that. It may never be perfect, but you know, I think that within 2 weeks, people are going to see a change. And I'm going to use the word dramatic by and large, because you know, you do all those things and suddenly you've cut the inputs, you've increased the excretion and you've reduced the metabolism. Uric acid's going to come down. People are going to have a big smile on their face. Will they necessarily feel better right then? No, they won't. And again, you don't feel your high blood pressure by and large, the silent killer. You don't know when your blood sugar is 150 versus 110. And yet people are paying attention to that stuff now and with good reason. Yeah, you know it when your belly's getting bigger, your clothes don't fit. But these other things are kind of silent markers that are running rampant in the background. And, you know, the whole mission of the book, of writing the book is so people will measure their uric acids and they will have a smile on their face when it was elevated and now it's under control, because they get why it matters. And they may get why it matters before their doctors get why it matters.
Oh, so empowering, so important, and things that people can jump on Amazon, buy your book, Drop Acid, buy their uric acid meter, start to measure. And whether, I mean, if their uric acid levels are high, you've explained on this podcast how that directly influences their waist circumference and the accumulation of fat as an app, you know, a mechanism in our body that isn't, you know, being used correctly because we have food everywhere. So
yeah, and you just look down at your belly and you say to yourself, my body is preparing for winter. And how silly that is, that I'm turning on mechanisms in my body that are making fat as it should, as it knows to do when it gets certain inputs to prepare me for starvation. And guess what? I'm not going to starve. When you look at it that way, you understand how these mechanisms work, why they work in the historical context, and now you've got the tools to bring it under control.
Always such a refreshing, motivating, and empowering conversation with you, Dr. Perlmutter. Thank you so much for being here, for taking the time to write this book, for giving people the tools to change their uric acid levels. It only takes 2 weeks. If you're tuning in, if anyone in your family or your friends have any of the issues that Dr. Perlmutter talked about, start with the uric acid meters. Take your own health into your control. It's not a very large expense and it can make all the difference. Dr. Perlmutter, where can people follow along? Where can they snag the book? Thank you again for being here and all your
work. Kelly, my pleasure. And I want to say thank you for all that you do. I mean, you've had such incredible people on your program, you know, thought leaders, Bill Davis, Sarah Gottfried, Kara Fitzgerald. Wow. I mean, no, but she's done some amazing work. Gary Taubes, of course, Robert Lustig. You've had some real powerful people on the program who are basically saying the same thing, you know, that we can be the stewards of our health destiny. And it's just getting the knowledge. And that's what you do so well. And I commend you for it. So thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be a megaphone of your work. So thank you so much for doing the hard work.
I'm at drperlmutter.com, drperlmutter.com. The book is Drop Acid, and the website for that is, oddly enough, dropacidbook.com.
Great. I'll link to everything in the show notes, along with where people can get their uric acid meter. Thank you for being
here. Awesome. Great to see you.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.